Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
First of all, you should know that I'm only making this podcast now because I couldn't get my hands on a PS5, and I figured talking about it was the next best thing. Really, though, Sony's new machine and Microsoft's competitor, the Xbox Series X, have been out for about a month now and also sold out for about a month now, just about everywhere. These new gaming consoles signal the next generation of video games. They represent hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue, and they're showing us a fundamental shift in how we consume entertainment. If you want to get a sense of how big that shift has been, I want you to think about the Sony brand for a minute. Think about what it has represented for most of the past 60 or so years. Unless you are so young that I don't even want to think about it, your first encounter with a Sony product could have been anything. A stereo, a VCR, a Walkman, a transistor radio, a TV, a camcorder, a CD player, an LED screen. Literally, anything electronic. But if you are young, and you have grown up in this century, your first encounter with Sony was a PlayStation. Almost certainly, video games have become Sony's biggest business, so big that they've gotten out of other businesses to support them. And now, the latest chapter in its battle for industry dominance has arrived. So what happens in the next phase of the console wars? Just how far has Sony come? And what have they done to this industry along the way? And because I have to know, and you probably want to know too, should I get a PS5 or an Xbox? Assuming either of them ever comes back in stock. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Seth Scheisel is a former reporter and critic, now an occasional contributor at The New York Times. He's also a contributing editor at Protocol.com. Hello, Seth.
Hello, Jordan. Thanks for having me today.
You're welcome. For those of us who didn't grow up in the electronic boom of the 80s and the early 90s, can you sort of describe where Sony came from and how big they grew to be and what they once made?
Oh, sure. Well, Sony, going back decades, really was one of the originators of mass consumer electronics. Sony was born after World War II and really helped popularize the transistor radio in the 1950s as a mass consumer product. And then Sony also was involved with popularizing the cassette, helped invent the entire CD format, was involved in popularizing home videotape, and then also the DVD. So sure, I mean, if you grew up in a mass consumer society in the 70s or 80s or even 90s, you might have had a Sony television. Their Trinitron brand really was the first high-end color television brand. You might have had a Walkman, a Discman. So they really did make a wide variety of consumer products for many years. That's where the company came from.
And if you're, say, a young teenager or an older child now, what do you know Sony as?
Well, these days, their mass consumer product is now the PlayStation, their video game machine. So Sony began its video game division in the 1990s. At that time, you know, the big original home console makers were companies like Atari, and then Nintendo, obviously, Sega. And Sony, which had popularized and invented the CD format, you know, back at that time, most games were distributed on cartridges. They took a long time to manufacture, and you would plug them into the console. But Sony had the idea that perhaps games could be distributed on CDs, then called CD-ROMs, because not only could they fit more information, but they were easier and less expensive to manufacture. So Sony started the PlayStation console unit in the 90s, partly to popularize CD-ROMs, but also because they wanted to make a mass consumer product. They had explored a joint venture and a partnership with Nintendo which didn't work out. So Sony and Nintendo became arch rivals really at the beginning of Sony's console experience. And then they released the first PlayStation 1 in the mid-1990s.
For those who don't remember the onset of CD-based gaming and sort of the exit from the old cartridge-based format, can you describe like the impact on the industry of the first the PlayStation, I guess, and then the Xbox and the PS2? Like, how monumental was that change?
Well, I mean, maybe it's best just to take a little bit of a step back.
Sure.
And you know, video games were first commercialized in the 1970s. With games like Pong, right, and Space Invaders. Mm-hmm. And there was always between games, arcade machines, right, that one would play in public, you know, in a public space, and then home consoles. And there were early consoles that had very simple games like Pong. And then if you've heard of Atari, the Atari 2600 was really the first mass market home game console. And that really became popular in the late 70s and early 80s. And it had graphics that were not quite as good as an arcade. And all these games, the cartridge was just a way of encoding the software, right, on hardware. And you'd plug it in. And they used to do the same thing still with Nintendo Switch games, mm-hmm. right? And you know, there are still game consoles that use physical cartridges. But in the early 80s, there was a big crash in the video game industry because the industry had expanded too quickly, too fast. There's a legendary flop with an Atari game about E.T.,
right.
Extraterrestrial, the Steven Spielberg movie. But something happened as the technology became more powerful. Video games started to retreat a little bit from that public sphere, right, the arcade, and into the private sphere. I always like to think that the high watermark for the early popularization of video games was the James Bond movie, Never Say Never Again, when Sean Connery comes back to reprise James Bond. And this is, I think, 1982. I could be wrong about that. Early 80s, and there's this great scene in a casino where he's playing a video game in white tie and tails, and James Bond has to have a casino scene, right, where he takes on the villain. And the villain, Maximilian Largo, challenges him to a video game where the game shocks you every time you lose. But this was really the high watermark of video games as something cool that you did in public. If James Bond is playing a video game in a casino, this is in the early 80s. But what happened over the course of the 80s, starting with the original Nintendo and some more advanced game machines, with the software, you didn't have to go to the arcade anymore, right? Not the casino, but didn't have to go to the arcade or the laundromat or someplace in public mm-hmm. to play games. You could play them at home. And that's when the stereotype of the antisocial closeted gamer in the basement first developed. Video games didn't start that way culturally. But as the game machines became more powerful and you could play them in home, right, in your bedroom, that's when games sort of retreated from the public sphere as the machines got more and more powerful, to answer your question. And so when the CD-ROM came along and now you could put video and more advanced graphics on the machine, that sort of continued that trend. So gaming became more popular into the 90s, but it stopped being something that the whole family did together. Now, all of a sudden now it was the young man, you know, with a controller that now has, you know, 15, 20 buttons on it. That's not that accessible to the mass public. And so that was really where the game industry was when the PlayStation 1 came out in the mid-90s, right? And then the PlayStation 2 and Xbox. So Microsoft then comes in to try to compete with the Xbox. And the whole notion of the Xbox, the original Xbox, was it was supposed to be big and powerful and brawny, because the notion was that the market was just, you know, young men who were interested in power and didn't care about nuance. And that was the notion of the game industry at that time. And that went on for another decade plus. And so you had the PlayStation 1, the PlayStation 2. You started, Sega got pushed out of that business. Nintendo started to retreat from being a mass market competitor to really focusing on family-friendly titles, more of a niche. And we saw that with products like the Nintendo Wii, which came out about 15 years ago as well, which is really trying to popularize gaming again, right? Bring gaming back out of that cultural basement, back into the living room, with products like the Wii for a broader audience. But you really then started to see, starting about 15 years ago, Sony and Microsoft, PlayStation and Xbox, become the really big competitors in the mass market console business.
What I find fascinating about what happened and the way you explored it in your piece is that, you know, you describe there was Nintendo and there was Sega and there was Atari, and those are companies that literally primarily existed to make video game consoles and their cartridges. And I'm wondering if there was a tipping point, something the big guys at Sony or Microsoft realized that took mass market electronics companies and made them realize, you know, there is a ton of money in here, and actually these are the companies that should be really pushing video games.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. And you really do see this evolution, right, from Nintendo still, right? You know, almost their entire business is just video games. Sony was coming, as you mentioned, from this mass consumer electronics base. So they really knew how to, they had factories and they knew how to make all these different products, right? And ship them all over the world and market and sell them. And they obviously saw gaming as a real opportunity starting in the 90s. Now, Microsoft came from an entirely different perspective. Obviously, Microsoft is a software company, did not have its roots in making and shipping boxes full of physical products.
Right.
I mean, obviously, they, you know, they made some mice and keyboards, but they never made, you know, full-fledged computers and so on. So for Microsoft, it was almost more of a leap, you know, once again, going back about 20 years at this point. And there, Microsoft really, it was about trying to leverage their leadership in software. And how do we make a product, though, that's easier for a consumer to use? You can put all in one box, put in a store, and you can just walk out with the box, plug it into your television, and you're, all of a sudden you're doing something, you know, playing games, which is a different experience than the PC world that Microsoft had come from. And they had developed a lot of, you know, great gaming technologies like DirectX, which is one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons why the Xbox was called the Xbox, because Microsoft had invented a graphics technology called DirectX. But, you know, the experience of using a PC is much more complicated.
Right.
So for Microsoft, coming from the software side, then you have Sony coming from the consumer electronics side. And then even now, today, we now have the big technology companies, the big tech companies that you think of, like Google, like Facebook, like Apple, like Amazon, all also getting into gaming now, once again, because they're all recognizing all these different kinds of companies. And we can talk about different industries like the media industry. We haven't talked about that yet. All recognizing that interactive entertainment, right? The basic notion that when you're playing a game, you're making decisions, you're cognitively involved in what's happening next, you know, really is meaningful and engaging for the brain. And that's why people all over the world and every culture, you know, love to play games and, you know, have played games for thousands of years, obviously millennia. It's one of the oldest forms of human engagement. But now the technology makes much more advanced experiences possible. But that fundamental cognitive engagement of playing a game is a basic part of humanity. And that's why all these different companies and industries are gravitating it towards it now.
Give me a sense maybe of the kind of scale we're talking about here in terms of money on the table as, you know, Microsoft and Sony go to war again with the new additions of their consoles. Like, how big is this industry that the most massive companies in the world are fighting for a piece of the pie?
Sure. Well, we've seen gaming, interactive entertainment, become one of the largest forms of mass entertainment in the world. You know, it's funny, Jordan, coming into the beginning of this calendar year, many of the estimates were that the global video game market would be around $150 to $160 billion this year. Just from the beginning, that was the estimate for 2020 at the beginning of the year. And now the estimates are north of $180 billion, perhaps close to $200 billion.
Wow.
Now, we can come back to COVID and the effects of that this particular year. But this trend, if you go back 5, 10 years, this industry has doubled and tripled in size over the last decade, and is now much larger just on a dollar basis than the first run movie business and the music business put together, more than twice the size. If you add up all of the movie receipts even before COVID, right, worldwide, and then the entire recorded music business, including streaming. The video game business is now more than twice the size of first-run movies and the music business put together.
That's crazy. I knew it was huge. I had no idea of that scale.
I think the only media business that's consistently larger than video games now is the television business. If you include all advertising and subscriber spending around the world, If you throw in the advertising side, it's definitely bigger. I'm talking about if you add up every ad, every dollar spent on every ad on every television station around the world, it's certainly larger. But I think TV is really the only one that's bigger than video games now financially.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Before we go on to talk about this round of Microsoft versus Sony, just to get back to our original discussion, maybe give me a sense now of some of the work you did for your piece. Like, what percentage of Sony's revenue is driven by the PlayStation, and what else do they even bother with anymore?
And before we get to Sony, it's one other thing I'd like just to point out is just the number of people that are playing games around the world, right? There's the dollars, and then there's just... You know, there's something like 7-8 billion people on the planet right now. And almost half the people on the planet, I think something like 3 or 4 billion people a year, play some kind of electronic game. So this is no longer a niche. Something like half of the world's population now plays some sort of game, not least because many people, or vast majority of people in industrialized societies, now have a very advanced computer that they carry everywhere with them. They call it a phone.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the most popular form of playing games. As for Sony in particular, the PlayStation business is now the largest part of Sony. About a quarter of the company's revenue and operating income comes from the video game business. I think maybe a little bit more. The other lines of business that Sony is still in, they are still a player in consumer electronics. Nowhere as large and ubiquitous as they used to be. They really lost big parts of the mass market television business to South Korean manufacturers about a decade plus ago. But they still do play at the high end of the television business in terms of like very expensive televisions. Sony obviously also on the media side still has a Sony Pictures, a television and movie business out of Hollywood, Sony Pictures, and then also a music label. Sony Music is one of the world's largest music labels. Now, those businesses, the TV business, the movie business, the music business, are undergoing their own changes. But Sony is still major players in TV and movies, in addition to consumer electronics and the video game side. And then, as befits a Japanese conglomerate, they have some other businesses that might not seem directly related, but are also important parts of the company. One is what's called an image sensor business. This is an advanced semiconductor business in Japan. And we say, what's an image sensor? It's the very advanced little chips that make cameras in phones. So they actually, so if you have an iPhone or a Huawei phone, you almost certainly have a Sony image sensor in the cameras that Apple uses and other manufacturers use. So they have an image sensor business. And then they also have a financial services business in Japan. Sony is an insurance company. You can buy life insurance and various forms of insurance from Sony in Japan. But PlayStation is now the biggest part of the company and is the biggest part of the most profitable and largest part of Sony.
And with the incredibly large and growing amount of revenue on the table yearly in the video game business, how important is it to them or to Microsoft to win this round of the console wars? And what kinds of things will they have to do to try and do that?
Well, the notion of a console war is almost, I don't want to say becoming outdated, but is evolving.
Really?
And there's a couple of dimensions to that. The first thing to understand is that the console business in general is really only about a quarter of the video game business overall. When we talk about that $160, $180, potentially $200 billion industry, at least half of that is mobile, right? There's three basic parts of the video game industry in terms of how people play games. One is mobile on their phone or tablet. Second is console. And third is on a PC. By far, the largest is mobile. At least half the business globally is mobile. And then the other half is pretty much split between PC and console. One's a little bit larger than the other, depending on how you count. So the entire console business is only about a quarter, roughly, of the global video game business. And what's also interesting is you talk about those 2, 3, 4 billion people around the world who play some sort of video game. Console gamers are a very small portion of that. The entire global universe of top-end console homes is really only about 150 million households, something like around the world. And that hasn't actually grown very much over the last decade or two. So you're really fighting, you know, look, those people do spend a lot of money, but it's not the entire game business. So the notion that the console war, if you will, is de facto a proxy for the entire video game business is not accurate. Now, just within that console business, it's actually more important to Sony than it is to Microsoft. And that's because for Sony, that's really the only part of the video game industry where they have, where they play, if you were, pardon the pun. Sony does not have a major role in the mobile part of the video game business. Sony does not have a major role in the PC side of the video game business. They only really play in console. So that's where they, you know, you see what they have to win. So it's more important to them. Now, Microsoft, on the other side, not only plays in console, but they're obviously a dominant and very important company in the PC business. And they are also expanding into mobile in a different way using something called cloud technology, which is a bit of a separate subject. But the point is that Microsoft has a broader ecosystem across the game industry. And that really plays into how they're marketing their console machines. For Sony, when you buy a PlayStation, it's because you really want a PlayStation, and you want that particular experience, those games you can only get on PlayStation. But on Xbox, you may want an Xbox because you have access to a wider variety of games, and you also want to play on your computer and potentially on a mobile device. And so that broader ecosystem and also the subscriptions that Microsoft is offering, where you don't have to pay $60, $70 for a game up front. Instead, Microsoft is offering a subscription package called Game Pass, where you pay $10 or $15 a month US. And then you have access to hundreds of games. So they're really offering different propositions at this point. They're not really going head to head. Sony will sell more boxes for sure. But that doesn't mean that both companies can't win with slightly different strategies at this point.
It's interesting because I remember, and maybe I'm wrong, but I remember from previous, you know, Microsoft versus Sony releases that it would be so important to get your particular box into someone's home that they're often just taking a loss on the console itself, and in turn for hopefully securing, you know, your purchase of games for the lifetime of the console. Is that still logic that applies?
Sure. And let's be clear. The actual hardware on the box, they are definitely taking a loss on. I've had analysts tell me that Sony may be losing up to $100 US on each one of the boxes themselves, because they both companies on the console, they do make their money back long term on licensing fees. Anytime anyone sells a game for their machine, they get a cut. So let's be clear. I mean, that is still important to get in there. But the value proposition is changing. Like I said, you know, Microsoft is now offering a subscription package where you can pay $10 or $15 a month and get access to a wider variety of games. So that changes the financial model a bit, where Sony is definitely following a more traditional, old school approach, where they do still expect you to pay, you know, $70 US up to $95 equivalent overseas for a game. So that is still important.
I guess my last question, because it's been great to get a look inside this world that I, you know, engage with mostly just through picking up a controller. But what, as someone who covers this, what fascinates you the most these days about the way the industry is growing and evolving? You know, you've already touched on some things that I wouldn't have assumed are changing. What's blown your mind recently?
I do think that this is the most interesting industry in the world. And it's because not only is it a mass entertainment business where you have billions and billions of people engaging, but it's an incredibly diverse business. When you have 30, 40, 50% of the world's population playing games, the games that they play and the business models and distribution models from a business side and the technologies that enable these games are also similarly diverse, right? It's no longer a monolithic game world where everyone's playing a PlayStation, everyone's playing an Xbox. There's so many different models, so much different kinds of content, so many different kinds of companies, so many different ways of paying, so many different ways of distributing. And then, of course, the technology of making these games has such a wide variety and diversity. That's what I think is the most important part. And the other side is that obviously, you know, now, amid a global pandemic, when people can't socialize in person, it's been really great seeing how games can provide a social and a community experience, right? It's not just you and the book or you and the album. Games are a layer through which you can interact with other real people, right? You can interact with your friends and family when you can't see them in person. And so games as a way for people to actually connect and form human connections is another part of why this industry is so interesting.
Seth, thank you so much for walking us through this. I appreciate it.
Thank you for taking the time.
Seth Scheisel of Protocol.com and occasionally The New York Times. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. To find me on Twitter, in case you want to buy me a PS5 or an Xbox, I am at The Game Sheet. You can find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. You know that one by now. You can also email us, TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. I do not want screeds about why Nintendo is better than either Sony or Microsoft. Please. And of course, wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, does not matter. Thank you for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.